This is Leave Your Mark. I'm Vince Cortez, and today's guest is Dr. Thomas Lally. He's a historian, a philosopher, and Dr. Lally's approach to integrative oncology industry worldwide in order to reach more people and his colleagues has developed an online program that empowers everyday people to control the aspects of their lives that will facilitate and prevent cancer, elimination of cancer, and overall health restoration. Dr. Lally, thank you for being my guest here today.
Thank you for having me.
Hi there, and welcome. Now it's time for America's favorite podcast, Leave Your Mark, with your host, Vince Cortez. If it's fly, loose fit it, it's Cortez. If freeze and chub is in it, it's Cortez. Leave Your Mark is about inspiring the world, one guest at a time. Pass the word from Brooklyn to Pittsburgh, from urban to suburb, it's Cortez, you heard? And here is our host, Vince Cortez.
You have quite an extensive background, so what I would like to do is give everyone an opportunity to hear as much of your insight as possible. So what I want to do is just touch on a few things here. As my guest, you're born in New York, raised in Los Angeles. Parents were Tom and Esther. Your only child, and you went to high school at North Hollywood High, where it had a few casual interests, the trumpet and the piano. And upon graduation, you would go to UCLA for a psychology degree and your undergraduate work. Then you move on to University of Denver, and you're there for your master's, and then on to University of Hawaii. So you've got quite a lot of life going on under your belt. So when you end up finishing at the University of Hawaii, can you take me into what happened after that?
Sure, yeah. University of Hawaii is where I got, by the way, Denver is where I got my master's in clinical psychology, and then Hawaii is where I went to medical school. So after I left medical school, I went to New York to do my residency at Columbia in internal medicine. And I did part of a oncology fellowship. Then I practiced conventional medicine for about 10 years before I decided to do, you know, integrative slash alternative holistic medicine. But my interest was always oncology. So I opened up a practice in New York. And after about 3 years, I guess, then I moved to Arizona. And I founded an Oasis of Healing, which we still have 17 years later. And it's an integrative oncology practice.
Now, your story is that a lot of what you were experiencing in your 10 years in your own practice was disturbing to you. And the idea of realizing that a lot of what you were experiencing was as much the patient is undoing as culture and society's pressures. So can you share with me how your mindset went at that age when you saw there was something that needed to be addressed in the market that wasn't being addressed? And what did you want to do about that?
Well, in practicing as a conventionally trained physician, our only tools for helping people were, you know, drugs, surgery, and, you know, radiation, things like that, or procedures. It became clear that it didn't work, you know, especially with chronic conditions. If someone had diabetes and they came to you now, 10, 15 years later, they still had diabetes, but they were on several drugs and now they're having complications from the drugs as well as the diabetes. And this, it was the same if it was hypertension or whatever it was. So I just saw that it didn't work. And that's not why I went, that wasn't my goal. My goal wasn't just to do that. My goal was to try to help people. So I left the conventional world looking for therapies that would help people be restored to health. So that's what I did. I went around, I went to Japan, studied there with some people. I went to Mexico, I went to Europe. I went all around the US and I would read books from doctors who were doing different kinds of therapies, alternative type therapies. And I would apprentice under them for, you know, several months. And then anyway, I finally got a picture in my mind of how things should work. And it involved changing lifestyle so that you stop instead of produce, you know, you can't get rid of hypertension, high blood pressure, you know, with a drug. High blood pressure is the body's adaptive response to a situation that is not compatible with life. So your body, you become hypertensive to survive. You become diabetic. You become insulin resistant because you're eating too much pasta and bread and cake and rice. So instead of taking a drug, stop eating those things. So anyway, if we understand that diseases, what are called diseases, are merely the body's adaptive response to a situation where the biological needs are not being met, then all you need to do is change the environment in which the body exists, and it will no longer have to do that particular adaptation. So that what you call diabetes goes away. High blood pressure goes away. And it's the same for cancer. You know, cancer is an adaptive response by the body. It's not like it's a third party that got into you and you've got to get rid of it. You know, that's not the way it works. If that's what it was, cancer would be easy. You'd get a tumor, you go to the surgeon, they take it out and you're done. But that's not the way it works. It's a systemic problem. It's deep, and it just doesn't work that way. So, so the program we developed is trifold. You know, number one, we teach the person how to stop making cancer through, you know, all the lifestyle changes. And that's everything from meditation to fasting, cleansing, eating healthy, et cetera, exercising, balancing hormones. Second part is to target and eliminate the cancer with metabolic therapies that don't kill the cancer because it's a poison, but they kill the cancer because the cancer cells lack certain enzymes that healthy cells have. So you don't harm the healthy cells. So you just make it impossible for the cancer cell to survive. So that's metabolic therapies. And then the third thing we need to do is to wake up the immune system. Because if you wind up with cancer, it means that in one way or another, your immune system has become overwhelmed and it needs to be reawakened. And that's what we do. We have several, you know, there's a IL-2, there's thymosin alpha 1, there's all kinds of interventional therapies that we can do. But it also involves meditation. It also involves resolving toxic relationships. It involves, you know, getting enough sleep and going to sleep early. There's many things involved in restoring immune function.
Your outlook or your approach to this is all around. So it's a mind, body, and soul type approach. You mentioned some things there. Myself, having been a cancer patient, I share your philosophy in thinking that we cause our own cancer. My life has fallen apart quite a bit. And I think the larger part of me was trying to battle through that when subconsciously my voice in my head had pretty much gone against me. I would find myself sick and winding up with a 12-pound tumor in the emergency room some 10 months later. And that conventional doctor really couldn't explain what was wrong with me until, you know, in this case, the cancer had grown so large that I had no other choice but to go to the hospital. So I'm a believer in that. Had I been of a less amount of stress and more control of my thoughts instead of letting myself, I really felt like I kept slipping to the degree where I wasn't creating a position of any leverage or power to feel good or confident about my life and what was going on in it. And you fall short. Next thing I know, I wasn't sick. I was really sick. And the systemic part of it is very real. So I like the idea of the alternative medicine and looking at the full approach as you were suggesting. So you mentioned a couple things in there about stop making cancer, which is one of those classic catch your eardrum type remarks, because our culture isn't groomed that way. And the belief that's set in the majority of the people, so they don't believe they caused their own cancer. They'd go into believing it was genetic before they caused it themselves.
Connect with us on LinkedIn. Be our friend on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Whether jumping out the MP or jumping on the app. You are listening to Vince Cortez. We just want you to leave your mark.
And then you reference other things that there's no such thing as disease, that it's a myth. So can you share with me in a bit more in depth what you mean by that, and the disease is a myth and stop making cancer?
Sure. As I said, so the body has there's a process to maintain balance, to maintain what's called functional integrity, right? And that's called homeostasis, right? And we have different levels of homeostasis. We have biomechanical, we have physiological, and then we have biochemical homeostasis. So the body is going to maintain its function and its integrity in spite of what's happening on the outside, right? So like, for example, with diabetes, it's a very easy one to understand. You're eating too much starchy food, sweets. You've got too much glucose. So your body's wisdom to protect itself so it doesn't die from the glucose, because it will kill them, is to become insulin resistant. So that insulin resistance is a protective adaptive response. So you don't just take, you don't want to get rid of that, because that's an adaptive response. That would be like a guy that wants to learn how to walk and he's got a cane. You don't walk up to him and kick the cane out for him. You teach him how to walk first so he doesn't need the cane. So it's the same kind of thing. So you stop eating all these things, and then your body no longer needs to be insulin resistant. So it will stop doing it, because your body is designed to do one thing only, and that is whatever is necessary to maintain functional integrity. And it will do it. Your body never makes mistakes. It's not stupid. It's of divine origin. It's a magical machine. You cut it and it heals, right? It's a healing, self-healing, incredible piece of biology. So so that's the thing about disease. So we call them diseases as if they were third parties, entities that got into us, and we need to get rid of them. It's kind of a very primitive, it's almost like a, you know, it's almost like an exorcism, you know, like I've got to get rid of this thing. Well, there's no thing in you. There's no place that you couldn't find the diabetes. It's not in your elbow and it's not in your nose. You know, it's a systemic response to protect you from your habits. You change your habits, your body no longer needs to do that. So the same goes with cancer. So in other words, we know what cancer is. It's when cells lose the ability to use oxygen. Their mitochondria, which are these little organelles inside the cell that make energy, become defective. They become defective because of the multitude of toxicities, and including one of the number ones is stress, like you were referring to a moment ago. So stress basically stimulates cancer growth in multiple ways, biochemical ways, ways that can be proven objectively, right? So you've got, and the way we turn off stress is by turning off our mind. And that's what meditation is. So meditation is learning how to shut up. It's learning how to not talk, how to not think, right? And by the way, if you ever think about it, the times in your life that you've been happiest is when you're not thinking. So if you're a surfer and you get up on the surfboard, you're not thinking. If you're a skier and you're skiing down the hill, you're not thinking. If you think, you'll run into a tree, right? So in other words, when you're dancing, when you're listening to music, you're in the moment. And that's when we're happy, when our mind is shut off. That's where we find bliss. So that's what meditation is. It's simply a technique, a tool to turn that off. And when you turn that off, you turn off stress. But anyway, we're being exposed through the food we eat, through the water we drink, through the air we breathe, the clothing we wear, all of these things, we're being exposed to toxins. And they all conspire along with stress to damage the mitochondria. And then the cell, to survive, starts to ferment. And that chronically fermenting cell is cancer. So if you can restore, if you can get rid of the toxins so that no longer stops happening, so you detox, you cleanse everything out, and now you eat foods that are real food. I mean, real food is food that grows. I mean, God made tomatoes, not tomato sauce. All right. So if you think about, you know, and all creatures on the planet eat the food the way nature presents it to us. We're the only ones who take it from nature, bring it into the kitchen, which is like a laboratory. We heat it up, we pound on it, we heat it up, we mix it with this and this. It's a chemical experiment. When we come out with this thing, and you know, it's no longer chemically the same as what grew on the vine. So now our body is not getting the nourishment it needs. That's why if you look around you, it's not difficult to see that we are a society of overfed and undernourished people. We're not getting the nourishment, and yet we're getting obese. And anyway, well, so you stop making cancer by not doing those things.
Let me ask you a question, because you mentioned the diabetes what happens when diabetic eats the sugar. How much in the methods that you use to help somebody? Because it's really difficult to break a craving like somebody who has a drink or somebody who smokes, or in this case, somebody who likes sugar, because your body is telling you it wants it. And you're referencing how the body is responding instinctively to those diseases or to the interference that's put inside the body when it begins responding in the other direction or trying to create healing immediately. So can you share with me how you take a patient who has those issues and they're trying to heal themselves? Because the tipping point here is your mind has to be in control of this, because if your body keeps making the decision for you, the disease is most likely going to get worse. So how does the mind, and I mean, old school, we'd call it willpower, but what are the methods that you bring into play here?
Well, you know, sadly and tragically, we human beings are pretty stupid. We have to get banged on the head pretty hard before we're going to change direction. So if you're living an unhealthy lifestyle, but you feel fine, you're not going to stop. You've got to be scared. Well, one of the best ways to scare someone is to tell them they have cancer. And the beauty about cancer, if there's anything beautiful about it at all, is that it's one of the few conditions where people stop negotiating. They'll say, oh, okay, stand on my head for 3 hours over here and then do what? You know, they'll do whatever you say. If they had, you know, if they have high blood pressure, diabetes, they're going to say, well, can I just do that? Well, can I just, you know, can I just smoke on weekend? But when they have cancer, they're scared to death. And that fear, we can, instead of using that fear to coerce them into doing something like have a surgery and be disfigured, instead of doing that, we use that fear as a motivation to change their lifestyle. So they're willing to do it. That's the reason I love working with people with cancer, because they're willing and they're happy to make changes, because they know if they don't, they're going to die. So that's what us humans. So I, in that regard, you have to see that pain and suffering are really our friends, because they help us make the change. Otherwise, we're not going to make the change. So that's really what it takes. The other thing that I do is that we have a course at our center. It's called the School of Life. We teach people what their body's made of, what it needs, what is food, what is not food, how to eat, how often to eat. So we teach them all the things that we never learned, and that is how to live a healthy life. So when you're living a healthy life, your body no longer needs to adapt, right? It's able to function in a condition that we call health. All right. So we teach people how to live a healthy life. And we can only do that with people who are scared to death, not that they're going to die. So now the other important thing that we do is by giving people this knowledge, right? Once they understand, then that also helps them, inspires them to change. For example, you're told, you go to the oncologist, he says, you're going to die in 3 months, blah, 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 blah. You come here and we say, no, your body's making 37 million new cells a second. So what you were last week is not what you are today. You're like a flame. A flame is not a static thing. It's streaming gases. It's a constant process. So what we want to do is you will not be, if you have a condition this year and you had that condition last year, it's because you're still producing it this year. So you don't have to continue to produce it. So it's actually a very empowering bit of information. So then you shifts the control, because we relinquish control to doctors and saying, okay, you fix me, doc. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you're dropping your car off. You fix me. Well, yeah. They can't because you're not broken, because your body's doing what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
And that is adapt. Mm-hmm. So what you do is, instead of that, you put the responsibility and the power back to the person. And the person says, okay, I'm going to live a life that doesn't require an adaptive response called cancer. And so we see it all. I mean, if I could tell you stories of people who had 3 weeks to live, and I get postcards from them 8 years later while they're on vacation in Paris. So yeah, it doesn't, you know, that whole paradigm, that whole conventional approach just simply doesn't work. And that's why, if you look at the mortality rates of cancer, 1950 compared to 2010, they're the same. They haven't changed. Okay, so the war on cancer is a failure. So you don't go to war against the body. That doesn't work.
If you are listening from Australia, Florida, or just from around the corner.
From East Coast to West Coast outlets, if you're not into the dirty South straight, make a left and body body.
Contact us. Leave your mark with your host, Vince Cortez.
All right, so now did these people, when you're helping them move forward, how much in a detox then? So it's like this diabetic's not eating as much sugar. How do you manage them through the withdrawal and probably a lot of the crazy thoughts that are going to creep in their head when they're not feeling so good because they're doing as they're told?
Well, they're in our center where everybody is doing the same thing. Everyone's positive. You know, you're not outside driving past the McDonald's. You're not sitting around with your friends eating, you know, cheeseburgers and donuts. You're not around that situation. You're around people eating healthy foods or drinking juices. And you're learning every day. You're in an environment of healing. So you're learning every day the value in this glass of fresh vegetable juice. I mean, there's more nutrition in 1 liter of juice than most Americans get in 1 month. It's amazing. Wow. So you're getting a super nutritious. So when you know that and you're drinking it and it's got to taste good, we make it taste good. We'll put enough apples to make it taste good, but we don't want it to be too sweet. You know, and we put in all the other healthy things. And so you're drinking 3 to 4 liters a day and you're not eating. Oh, wow. And you go through a cleanse and you do this for like 2-3 weeks. And what happens is after day 4, you no longer have an appetite. You no longer desire to eat food. And you realize that you never were really hungry. Instead of hunger, you were experiencing something called appetite. So now it becomes easy after day 4 or 5. And what happens is your body starts to clean and you start to feel better. And this is a very important and necessary experience in order for you to go on. So after you've cleansed and you feel really good, now we offer you some delicious uncooked food, but it's delicious.
You've come around the corner with them at that point.
Yeah. Exactly.
What I want to ask you, because I think it's really interesting, and for generations, mom's home cooking, and your reference that cooking food is poison. And the first question is, what happens to the food then when it gets cooked?
Okay, yeah, it's a good question. So first of all, food is full of enzymes, and the enzymes are life. Enzymes, you know, we have 21 with 36 zeros after it. That's a big number. It's 21 septillion. Okay, that's how many chemical reactions are going on in our body every second.
Wow.
Every second. Okay, every one of those chemical reactions is mediated by enzymes. Okay, so enzymes are how life happens on a biological, you know, front line perspective. So the enzymes that are in food are there to help digest it. So when you eat food that's not cooked, when it ends up in your upper part of your stomach, it's got its own enzyme, so it begins to auto-digest. So by the time it arrives to your pancreas, it's already been partially digested, and your pancreas doesn't have to work that hard. Now, when you heat it up past 119 degrees Fahrenheit, right? You know that boiling water is 212 degrees Fahrenheit. When you heat it up to 118, 119, now you've killed all the enzymes. So now the food is dead. It no longer has any life in it. It no longer has electric charge in it. Okay, so that's steaming or boiling. But when you do anything else like grill or bake or fry or broil, when you do any of those things, you now add another layer of toxicity. And these are called Maillard reactions. Chefs know them well. A Maillard reaction only occurs at about 350 degrees Fahrenheit. And what happens is an amino acid binds with a sugar and it turns into what are called Maillard chemicals. One well-known one is called acrylamide, which is not only a carcinogen, but it's a neurotoxin. So these foods, now they're dead because you've killed the enzymes. And number two, you've added these Maillard chemicals, which are carcinogenic. You can take these chemicals that are produced from food and give them to an animal and they'll get cancer. So now, but it is the Maillard chemicals that impart the odor and the fragrance and the taste of cooked food. So what we are addicted to is we're addicted to these Maillard chemicals, right? And we should all go to a 12-step program, Maillard's Anonymous, right? That's what we're addicted to, right? And so anyway, that's the poison you're getting. And this is well known. Even when you look at the literature on people that are eating animals, that still eat animals, The worst thing you can do with a steak is grill it, because we now know that you're producing all these extra Maillard chemicals, and that's what causes, the cancers and stuff. So that's how cooked food is poison.
Now, Jen, you're an advocate of just a straight vegetable diet, just no meat.
Right.
So you're vegetarian?
Yeah, well, actually, we all are, but we just don't know it. Most of us don't know it. Our bodies, our anatomy and physiology is that of a vegetarian. Our closest relatives are gorillas, and chimps, orangutans. It's only the chimp that eats flesh, and doesn't eat it for nutrition. Eats it in kind of a macho type situation where they're killing another tribe, and it establishes the social order. And then the chimp that comes home with the most corpses to feed the other ones gets the most girls,
Oh,
he does it himself. So
wow.
we
Hierarchy
learn
effects everywhere.
we learn this from Jane Goodall in her studies. But anyway, so but the gorillas are vegans. The orangutans and the bonobos, all the other. So that's the closest relative we have. And they eat plants. So, and that's what our anatomy and physiology is. I mean, our anatomy and physiology is not the same as a dog or a cat. And they're designed to eat flesh. We're just simply not designed to eat flesh. We can get away with it, of course, for a while. We can also get away with smoking cigarettes for a while. We can get away with smoking crack cocaine for a while. But it's not going to lead to optimal functioning, right? So yeah, just because you can say, well, I feel better when I eat a steak. Well, I feel better when I have a cigarette. Well, I feel better when I have a drink. But just because you feel better doesn't mean it's actually good for you. It might mean that you're addicted, right? So we have to understand those things. And so part of learning how to change your lifestyle is by having this knowledge, because once you have this knowledge, then you're able to understand yourself and you're able to put your cravings into perspective. And then when your life is on the line, it's a really good motivation. And that's why I love working with people who have cancer.
Yeah, I agree. That sense of urgency is the mind changer, and yours is being top to bottom, mind, body, and soul with your alternative medicine and approach. I could talk to you for a long time about the food, because that had been a point of contention for me with healing. And what I would like to do is as I do with all my guests, is ask you how you would like to leave your mark and your contributions into this world are quite significant.
Yeah, well, I would just, if I had to sum it up, I would say health is like respect. You can't purchase it, you can earn it. And you can't purchase your health. So everyone, if they want health, and we do, because it's fundamental. If you're not healthy, you're not going to be a good mother, you're not going to be a good father, you're not going to be a good friend. If you're sick, you won't be good to anybody. So number one priority must be health. And so the way to get health is to live a healthy life. It's really quite simple. So my message to the world is that we didn't learn how to live healthy. We learned how to live in an artificial world, and we eat artificial things, and we have our clothing on, we live in boxes, and we drive around in machines, and we don't know how to survive on the earth. If you took away this artificial world, we would be helpless. We wouldn't know what to do. So the way to get healthy is to live a healthy life, and that means take your shoes off, get back on the earth. Put your hands in the soil. When you have relationships with people, be honest, be authentic. We don't have time to lie to each other. Let's just tell the truth. Let's be who we are. And by the way, guess what? Everybody's going to really accept you once if you're being honest. Because you know what? The truth is, and not a lot of people want to hear this, but the truth is, we're all the same. We're all the same. We all need the same foods. We all need to love. We need to be loved. We need to touch. We need to be touched. We need to laugh. We need to have friends. We all have the same needs. We're all the same. There are no celebrities. Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie are exactly the same as us. Okay, so but we forget that. So my message to the world is that the only true treasure you will ever have is health. And there's only two things you should pass on to your children. Number one, love, and the second one, health. And you give them health by not giving them any bad habits. So raise them eating human food. And human food is that which grows, okay, not that which is packaged. If someone hands you a package and it has a label on it, that's not food. Because if I handed you a banana, you certainly don't need a label to know what it is.
That's right. Wow. Tremendous insight. And so many people have been programmed otherwise with the culture which we live in, but this is a refreshing mindset that you take to this and bring to the modern approach of healing people. So I want to thank you again for coming by today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Thanks for listening to Leave Your Mark today. Tune into our next episode of Leave Your Mark with Vince Cortez. Be blessed.
You just left your mark. Thanks for listening. Listen to more episodes on demand. Just click Leave Your Mark with Vince Cortez.